I can't imagine us not working as a team. Everything that we've done on the journey with Kids Help Phone has been in lockstep with McCann, and including a strategic planner.
Hello and welcome to Grow Up, an APG Canada podcast, where we give strategic thinkers and creative tinkerers opportunities to grow. I'm your host, Michelle Lee, and today on the show, we'll be sharing with you our final episode in the APG Canada at 10 series. Over the last few weeks, we have celebrated 10 years of the APG with the release of 10 episodes, which have explored how strategy in Canada has changed over the last 10 years and what might be in store for the next. To wrap up our series today, we're chatting with Josh Hansen, VP Strategy, and Emily McLaren-King, VP Group Account Director at McCann, as well as Rebecca Stutley, SVP Brand Storytelling and Communications at Kids Help Phone. Just before we dive in, we'd like to give a special shout out to the team at McCann for sponsoring today's episode. As one of Canada's leading strategy departments and supporters of strategic planning, they've shown a keen interest in continuing to help us foster and strengthen Canada's strategic talent. And for that, we thank you. Josh, Emily, and Rebecca, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you here. Terrific if you could please introduce yourself to our listeners, including your background. And since we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the APG Canada, we'd love it if you could tell us where you were 10 years ago today.
Wonderful. Hi, I'm Emily McLaren-King, Vice President Group Account Director at McCann. My background is actually at McCann. I've been here for quite some time. And 10 years ago, I sat not in this building, but in this agency. And Hansen was even there once upon a time, as was Rebecca. So this is kind of a special serendipitous episode for us.
Oh, wow. Cool. Josh, you want to go next?
Sure. Yes, Josh Hansen. 10 years ago, I had to go back and look at LinkedIn to be certain. But I was at Leo Burnett then. I think I was a senior strategist at the time, and working with the inimitable Brent Nelson, who I, we're all nodding here, think the world of.
Great. Amazing. That's a nice little shout out. I'll be sure to tag him so he listens in on this. And last but not least, Rebecca, if you could tell us a bit about where you were 10 years ago and introduce yourself.
Sure. Rebecca Stutley. I use she, her pronouns. And you gave my title off the top. And I know it's a mouthful, but brand storytelling and communications at Kids Help Phone. And I say it's the best job in all of Canada. 10 years ago, like, what is time? Because we had a pandemic in the midst of that. But I was at a bank, which I think is so fascinating.
When I really? Think
back, yeah. It was the first client-side job that I had working at TD. And so when I think back to like a decade ago and where we are now, just, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Huh.
Wow. Cool. Interesting. And so, yeah, I mean, let's just get into the nuts and bolts of it. I mean, I'm sure we're going to have an interesting conversation. There's been different themes that have come up, with the different folks that we've chatted with, in the last few weeks. Do you have some reflections on how strategic planning has changed over the last 10 years in Canada?
I think it's only fair that I probably start. Yes. And again, some nods. Okay. It's interesting, Michelle, like reflecting on 10 years, because as Rebecca said, it's hard to put 10 years sort of like in your mind a little bit, like what was, what has been, what is that sort of time period? I think I actually went back and started to read a bunch of stuff from 2013 to like remind myself what 10 years ago, because it's like a long time, but no time. And anyways, all that sort of stuff. It's interesting, you know, I think like my experience with it, and I think my experience reflecting on it, is that like a lot of things are similar. It's just that our relationship to them has changed or evolved a little bit. And like some key themes from 2013, like the importance and rise of mobile, like really that sort of like mobile first thinking. The idea of social media, not just being social media, but kind of like media writ large. And then sort of like purpose, like brand purpose being at the sort of like the cornerstone or the pillar or the like of everything we do. And I was like, as I was reflecting, I was like, wow, these things are actually still a lot of what we're talking about today. It's just that our context and our relationship with them has just evolved because it's 10 years and like any relationship. it's gotten more complicated and also maybe a little bit better too.
What about, I'm curious, and I'd love to get Rebecca and Emily's your thoughts as well, because, you know, again, we're not only just speaking to planners, we're speaking to everyone who works with planners. What about planning specifically? Obviously, there have been changes in the industry in the 10 years. What are your thoughts on planning in particular in terms of people's understanding of what it is, integration of it into agency and client relationships and projects and campaigns, value of strategic planning, those sorts of things?
I mean, I can start and give Josh's voice a break, but I think for me, at least sitting on the business leadership side, the value of planning as seen by clients, I think, has really increased over the past 10 years. Not to say that it wasn't important then, but I think it's so, so important. And it's such a big part of our conversations now, even more so, I think, than it was 10 years ago, at least in my experience.
I would totally agree. I think maybe in the past, it was almost a separate function that would be brought in at key moments, whereas now it's an integral part of where you start from, but also it's all the way through to, it's embedded in how you think about media, how you think about messaging, how you think about what the impact will be down the line.
It's really interesting you say that, right? Because I think perhaps like it really was considered an input, right? An input as opposed to part of the process the whole way. Like the amount of time I spend talking and like all the way down into production and stuff is probably different than 10 years ago. That's really interesting. It's like, it's not just sort of like in and out.
Yeah. Do you think, Josh, then that it's almost like not a decentralized function or expertise, but you've shared some tools and expertise and now we all embrace it and bake it into the way that we work together?
You know, like, and this is where, again, like, let's perfect go back to sort of like the Leo Burnett time. I think like, sort of for me in that sort of like 10 years ago, it was the beginning of establishing principles maybe in planning that became the kind of help that play through, right? A little bit. So it was, as opposed to being a function or like you had to do some things to do planning, right? You had to establish like, what are the objectives? And then you kind of put it into the system and then disappear. The idea that it's a little bit more principle-based is it's like, this is how we have to work together throughout this. Again, this is where maybe media complexity stuff and things like that come in, right? Where like planning isn't so much an input. It's a like perpetual moment in time as opposed to one moment in time. Again, that's where the media thing probably plays in a little bit too. But and also brand narrative stuff, right? Like brand narrative is so important. Like where over time, ensuring that folks are like, we're both managing it, nurturing it, because we don't control it anymore either, right? So yeah, that would have probably has a lot to do with the fact that it's just like it's an omnipresent sort of discipline as opposed to in and out, maybe.
Do that sound again.
In and out.
And there was a time when like business leadership and creatives, like you were like, oh, our partners and you guys were partners, right? Strategy and creative. Now it really is like, it's a three-legged stool. It has to be like, and the way that we work as a group is so connected between creative and strategy and business leadership now in a way that I think was a little more in and out in the past.
Yeah. Like, listen, we can just talk about preference a little bit too, maybe, but it's interesting, right? Because it is, and then probably include clients as well, right? As part of that whole, I was talking to someone recently too, about just like writing creative brief, working on creative. And like, again, that used to be a little like classic idea of planning is like disappear with the brief and like do some research, come up with idea and then like grace the world with it. And like, I spend a lot of time working with clients and creative and even production, right? Like I would say, actually that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about one of the most interesting, and this is actually the point you're already making. So just like, oh yeah, we'd have basically zero interaction with production. And now like, right. And now that's actually part of it. So add that group in as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think it's a lot more conversation, discussion. And again, each discipline kind of brings this thing, right? But that return to like, what are we trying to accomplish? What is the point of this? As opposed to just being, we're the voice of the audience. Mm-hmm. It's like, actually it's much more about narrative. Yeah.
So some interesting points you've raised there in terms of, it sounds like, I mean, I feel like I've even noticed it just over the pandemic. I mean, the amount of tools we have now for collaboration, the ways we work are so different, I think, than when we were all kind of in the office and, you know, not working on live documents and things like that. So, I mean, some reflections that I've had and some other folks who've been on the show have talked about is that in some people's experience, planning in Canada anyways, had grown a little bit out of the function of account management. You had some agencies where there was no planning department or there was one strategist. And so the account department, the account handlers did a lot of the creative brief writing, and there was, you know, oftentimes people who became strategists had even come from account management. And now it seems as though, and you kind of touched on it, there's a lot more conversation about the partnership. I mean, we know three-legged stool, five-legged stool, whatever legged stool, but there's a lot more conversation about partnership between the strategist or the planner and the creative. And there are different kinds of strategists, but sometimes there's been a nod towards kind of those strategists who almost help set up or help identify or illuminate areas for creative ideation. I'm curious if you've noticed that shift as well, or is it just about different kinds of planners? There's more business minded versus creative versus what have you.
That's really, yeah, totally. I think it's probably both, meaning like just listening to you, I'm like, oh yeah, early days. It's like early days for me was that very, like a lot of the more senior strategists when I was quite junior would have come from the account discipline. And I was maybe in sort of like the early stages of like actually entering as of folks actually interning as strategists and then working through the system, where like there was a little bit of this, you have to like earn your chops to get to go. And so then evolve over time, 10 years plus, well, that's more than 10 years ago, but like evolve over time and the discipline has matured. It's gone from its adolescent phase, and I'm not sure what phase it's in yet. Perhaps someone smarter than me has already shared that on your show, but like it's grown into actually be a discipline, which means that it's just become, there's been, it's not as singularly defined by folks who've spent 10 to 15 years in accounts and then moved in. It is people enter with their own point of view, their own life experience. And so that shapes the nature of the planner. I think it's one of the interesting disciplines where you can kind of establish what type of planner you are. And that flexibility means sort of like you fit at different points in the system, you bring a different thing. But you're right, it's probably the maturation of the discipline that's allowed for different types of planners to exist, whether you be a creative planner, an analyst, a bit more business oriented, whatever that sort of thing is. And each has a role. And I think it's interesting. More special, and I think we're seeing more and more specialized functions and also even more generalized, meaning like the whole like brand planning is kind of a discipline that's been around for a long time, business planning. And you get the more niche stuff, the like of the moment stuff. We're an industry that's obsessed with sort of like, we have a bit of a recency bias, new shiny thing bias. And so you get those kind of like things popping up. I guess the thing for me though, like even so, all true, yes, but then it's, well, maybe, but then it's sort of, but this is where I kind of went to like the principles or like what are the core functions of the discipline. And a lot of that stuff has remained true despite the fact it's sort of adapted to new environments. And I think that's what I find both interesting and also is like when you start to look ahead or think about things, it's like what will change? Hopefully not some of those core principles as we adapt to sort of like new phenomenon. But yeah, I think it is part just the discipline's matured. And I think by maturing, it's allowed a more elastic definition of what a strategist can be.
Think too about how much data you have now that you didn't have 10 years ago. Mm. Like think about the inputs that we have when we're working that you didn't have at your fingertips in the same way 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely led to a change. It's led to also different expectations for the
discipline. Absolutely.
So whether like different types of planners, but also, yeah, the expectations of evidence-based decision-making. And it's definitely, I see that's evolved as opposed to like the gut.
Yeah. Now it's like, what's the nugget? What's the jumping off point that becomes the springboard for creativity, and what's it grounded in?
Definitely don't want to lose the gut, but no. I think it's that, I was just reading a thing. It's like, it's the art and science of like context and then sort of creativity. And so like finding that balance between what can be evidence-based, but what also has that level of insight. And just, again, that marriage.
Can't lose that.
No, because there's a difference between data analysis and data storytelling. Yeah. And there's something about planners that take the data that has been analyzed and like puts the story around it, put the context around it, finds the friction within it, which is like, you know, these are the things we're talking about day to day when we work together.
Yeah.
But,
yes.
Yeah. I'm going back to Michelle's like, whatever, you know, number of legs in the stool. I'm wondering also if planning has had to evolve because clients want to have those discussions. They don't want you to come back and present it as this perfectly finished thing. They want to discuss it and debate it and shape it, especially because you raised earlier about purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose, as we now know, cannot be manufactured. It has to be intrinsic and real. And so that kind of invites a client into those conversations in the way that perhaps that wasn't the way it was done 10 years ago or before.
Yeah. I think it's probably going back of even a little bit more. That's where we're kind of jumping around maybe our timeline here a little bit, but I think you're very right. Like it is, and I'm sure like, again, this is the neat thing. Folks can practice different ways and all that sort of stuff. But like Michelle was also talking about all these collaborative tools, all these things like working, and we work in a different, timelines are very different.
That's
right?
A great point.
Like, and so this maybe has something to do with the whole nature of how we have to work together. You don't have that whole like waterfall-y thing where it's like we protect these massive periods of time for strategic development and brief development and creative development. All of those things have become compressed. And so it require, I think that I don't like whether it's, and again, I don't know if sure this is an individual thing or a discipline-based thing, but like, it does kind of invite a different way of working together. And that is whether that's collaborative or iterative or whatever, that sort of like cool buzzy thing. It's like, it's changed.
Yeah.
It's changed. And then it's been like that change has been compressed over the,
Well, I'm curious, and maybe we'll allude to this or get into this as we talk about what you think will change over the next 10 years is, maybe what hasn't changed? I mean, obviously the fundamentals of the craft haven't changed for obvious reasons. Some of the comments that it's great. Actually, you guys are the last episode in the series. So you get to
Let's wrap everything up then. Give us the details and we can comment.
you can tell me what you think about what's been said previously.
Mm-hmm.
What we used to hear 10 years ago or what we've heard from some clients was maybe some clients, and not to pick it all on clients, some clients maybe didn't quite have an understanding, I would think it would be fair to say, 10 years ago of what planning was or what the value was, or, you know, perhaps there were some who weren't, you know, quite ready to pay for it. And so it would be a cost that agencies would absorb. And I think we think that while those, the value of planning and the understanding of it has increased, there's this funny little thing, sometimes you look at agencies and you're like, planning is still like, we're smaller than HR at a lot of places. Are we ever going to be as big as the creative department? Is it because they get to work in teams that they get to be bigger, or than the account management department? Thoughts there? I'm curious. I mean, specifically said something controversial to get your reaction. So.
Yeah. Sorry. The first thing you said was because I got hung up on the second part of like, will we be larger? What was the first part? Cause that's where I got really excited for a second. Then I lost my train of thought when you were talking about the size of the department. Sorry, Michelle.
I think 10 years ago, it would have been fair to say that not all clients understood what strategic planning was or were willing to pay for it. And so it became a cost that agencies absorbed.
Sure. Yeah, that was it. Sorry. Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. There was a little bit of, again, 10 years ago or in that zone of a little bit older, there was a little bit of like agencies sometimes deployed strategy, like sort of like parachute jumpers, right? It was like, oh, jump into this meeting and be a sober second thought, or jump in this meeting and you can function in between the agency and the client. And I felt at times you were very much deployed as a like and this is a, I think we talked about this being a change, like, so you'd sort of jump in and be like, oh, I can offer a point of view or bring in a piece of data or discuss this. That is this almost as a, as an in-between and can, and then disappear again. And that ability to come in and out was advantageous at times when it came to selling or convincing or brief stuff. But it, I think it becomes difficult when it comes to like, what value are you adding to the sort of like the business and the relationship, jump forward in time. And like, we've talked about it being more all the time. I think the value is clear, but it also makes you, you're also more a part of the process, which again, comes with all the benefits and disadvantages that that would come with, right? You have closer relationships, you probably have more familiarity, but by the same token, maybe you're not as removed, meaning you have a different lens on sort of the project. You basically, I'm saying your bias in either or any particular direction potentially increases. So, but it gets a little bit easier at times to probably defend on the bottom line the value that strategy brings if they're a little more present in the process. Listen, to be honest with you, like, I'll insert a personal part of this, the second part. Like, there's a certain, like, there's something nice. I've been on different strategy teams I've been a part of. I like the camaraderie and of being the smallest group, of being deployed in a variety of different ways, of having folks who really have different paths to the discipline, and what that brings has brought to me and what I've learned from different people because they have such different experiences in the discipline and how they approach planning, the models they use, the tools, all that sort of stuff. Being small is also like, you know, you get to move between parts of the agency. You get to spend a lot of time embedded within creative and again, bringing stuff, working on the ideas. You get to have relationships with account. You get to have relationships with the executive in a different way than some of the disciplines. You get to have, so you have this ability to move and move. And I've like, listen, I've always enjoyed that in any social context, being able to move between the different groups. I found both liberating and also, you know, perhaps it allows you to escape a little bit of responsibility at times as well. And that's kind of nice. But yeah, I think that's a really, it's an interesting point in the sense of like what's changed. I really think the difference between being a parachute jumper and being sort of a part of the team the whole way as you march, excuse the sort of somewhat militaristic language. But yeah, that's a very interesting point, Michelle.
And I think you brought up something that being in it allows you to offer maybe sometimes a biased perspective, but a really informed perspective about the client's business. And I think, and I'll put Rebecca on the spot maybe to say, like, I can't imagine now some of the conversations that we have without Josh at the table, because having that diversity of thought and having somebody who thinks a little bit differently, like a planner, brings so much to the table.
Well, we sometimes pretend you and I have like a strategy conversation, then we're like, we should talk to Josh. But yeah, I think that is the magic of a planner, is being able to maintain your objectivity while also being in tune with the nuances that come with the business, because there are times where the creative product might demand a certain direction. And then when you say it out loud to the business, the client, you're like, ooh, wait, yeah, that may not actually land as we intended, or that, or in the way that we think makes the most impact. So I think what your analogy, your military analogy, is perfect, because it makes a lot of sense, which is not about saying you should stay as a small department, sure, which I think was Michelle's point. We are important. We should have a bigger department. But I can't speak to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's get on to what you think might change in the next 10 years. Where do you see strategic planning going?
I know enough to know I don't know. But I kind of start at the beginning of thing. I think the principles of the discipline are going to remain fairly consistent, in the sense of like the relationship between audience and media, ultimately context being such an important part. I think that strategy or planning brings to the discipline is that just a sort of like that overarching context sort of piece. So I think that stuff's going to be the same. I was thinking about this a little bit, and like, I think there's, listen, I think the tension between different dynamics at play are probably where the discipline lives the best. And I think, like, I don't know that it's going to change as radically as we think when we say, when we forecast 10 years in the future. I think whatever it is, I'm a little bit of a, like, it's not going to change as much as we think. I think more, I have greater expectations around how the business is going or marketing, and that really is going to change a little bit more than I think necessarily the discipline. But yeah, we just talked about it changing a bunch. So what do I know?
Well, maybe you know a lot of things, Josh. But what do you think that you would ever be replaced by a bot of some kind?
Oh, good. Thank you. Yes. Will we be replaced? Yeah. Listen, a friend of mine just became a doctor. And so we were talking. He's like, listen, I just got like the most replaceable job ever. What did I do this for late in my life? Listen, I think that's a great question. I think that has a little bit to do with all of us, but discipline 100%. I think there are elements. Listen, Professor Galloway, it's not AI that's going to replace you. It's someone who's really good at AI that's going to replace you. So I think yes, what it will hopefully do is allow more time for what I think humans and good strategists are good at, which is empathy, context, relationship to culture, all that sort of stuff. And my hope is that like technology and innovation liberates for more of that type of deliberation rather than the time spent trying to extract that information. Listen, ChatGPT has been an amazing research tool, right? It's incredible. So I think there's some really fun stuff like that, but on its own, without that larger contextual piece or that human empathy and all that sort of stuff, it's completely meaningless. So, that's a really good, the tools will change, how we adapt to the tools will change, our literacy and technology will probably change, but those still the context of like being human, putting people at the center of everything we do. Again, I'll go back to context. I think that's what strategists as a discipline generally do, insert specific discipline in there. Great, thank you, Rebecca. That was
great. Welcome.
Awesome. Well, so I mean, some of the other things we've heard and love to get your thoughts on these, you know, you can take one, you can take all, whatever you like. So things that have changed in the last 10 years that might continue to change in the next 10, effectiveness, emphasis on effectiveness, clients demanding more return on their investments and linkage between what they're investing, increased emphasis on FEs, increased emphasis on IPA certificates and understanding of that. Secondly, training. I think, Josh, it would be fair to say when you and I got into the business, there weren't Miami Ad Schools and Julian Cole, Mark Pollards and all these people. And, you know, similar to what we were saying before, you know, people got kind of plucked from the account management discipline as opposed to trying to come into an agency and start off as a strategist. Another thought, freelance. Are more people shifting into freelance? Are we seeing an investment in strategic planning, or are we seeing agencies in some cases cut back and believe that it's more of a, it's too expensive. I don't need it for every project or, you know, initiative. So I'm just going to hire when I need to. Also heard the growth of in-house agencies, clients setting up their own. And before it was just kind of resizing of banners. But we're seeing in the UK, for example, whole scale agencies being set up with not only creative smarts, but strategic as well. Two other things. I'm giving you a long laundry list. I'll let you pick what you want. And, you know, this could be a 10-hour podcast, but we'll keep an eye on the time. But two more that I just wanted to bring up was it seems as though there's been this kind of constant back and forth pendulum shift between specialist strategists, generalists, you know, comm strategists, UX strategists, brand planners, whatever it may be, and then back to generalists. And then the last thing, is expat strategists. I think in the early days in Canada, you know, there was a lot of folks coming in from the UK. I know your fearless leader comes from that part of the world. There was a lot of reverence, I mean, for good reason, for, you know, what's happening in the UK. And, you know, that's where strategy and planning came from. So what are they doing? And we need people from over there who can kind of teach us how to do it. We did a whole event actually on whether Canada has formed its own style of strategic planning and what that means. So I just threw a huge bomb into the room. Now I'm going to let you guys decide on what you want to latch on to.
I was going to take that as like, you know, one of those questions called like a firing line where they give you a bunch of things. You just go bam, bam, bam really quick through each of them. Also, I just want to say that I appreciate the generosity of everyone with the subject matter here and throwing things out there. It's very helpful. I think we can touch on all of them and folks like jump in at any point. So number one, efficacy IPAs. I'll tell you, it's fascinated me why we haven't always been obsessed with that. I think like this is the intersection of art and commerce. And I think abstracting either of those away from the work we do is silly. It's creativity with intent, and that intent is driving business forward, growth, or some other objective. Either way, we should be measuring it and challenging ourselves. So yes, I think there has been an increased focus on it, but I think that only makes perfect sense. And again, I'm more surprised that we haven't always been somewhat obsessed by it.
And I think that one's going to continue. Like the tools for measurement are only going to get better. We're only going to be able to do more and understand more about efficacy, I think, in the next 10 years.
Agree. And I think the risk, though, is that we prioritize what we can measure and we forget some of the other important pieces or challenging ourselves to measure different things. I know one of the conversations we've been having a lot is around impact as opposed to efficacy. Again, that makes perfect sense for this group of who's talking here today as well. Like we're very focused on what impact we can have. But yeah, I think it's foundational and extremely important. But yeah, I also think as there's more and more pressure on marketing budgets, demonstrating the value is increasingly important. Efficiency hasn't been the greatest thing for our business in some ways, but on the other hand, it drives scrutiny and scrutiny should make things better. But yeah, efficacy important. Number two, training. A gentleman who I used to work with nailed this for me, I think, years ago. And since then, I have really tried to live up to it, which is it's an apprenticeship business, largely. And I think taking time, both in informal and informal structures around training for young strategists and young planners is incredibly important. I do agree with you, Michelle, absolutely. In the early days, a lot of it was trial by fire, as in go. And I think a lot of that was built from the idea that a lot of people who were strategists or in strategy had come from a decade of experience, but not all had. And so I think we've matured in that. Again, there's external resources. There's more resources within agencies. And I think there's just more appreciation of the fact that, again, it is essentially an apprenticeship business in many ways. So taking the time to nurture that talent is really important. And expectations have shifted from young people, right? There's a much greater expectation around what training is available and how folks are supported through their careers. So absolutely.
Michelle, you talked about the expat community of strategists, but I wonder if there's not another expat, not from the UK, but from other industries. Like, I think more and more in the last 10 years, we've seen people not come up necessarily straight line through strategy, but come in from either like tangential disciplines or with that same sort of like rigor in how you think, but now applied to your point as an apprenticeship in a very like specific application in advertising.
Yeah, I think that's where some of the more interesting strategists I've worked with have worked for years in something, but then come into the discipline. Mm-hmm. So yeah, actually, a totally interesting lens. It's not just, about what we've learned as a Commonwealth from the UK, but also what other people from other industries have brought in 100%. Yeah. I think 100%. And not what we necessarily would always expect. Freelance and then like, yeah, freelance, listen, we've come out of a monumental shift in the way we as human beings experience life. So like reprioritization, all that sort of stuff. It is a discipline that, and I've worked with a bunch of really amazing freelance people I've learned a ton from. I think as it's a discipline that works well in a freelance capacity, although that goes in some ways different than what we were talking about, that sort of like always in, always involved
type
of thing.
Depends on the client, I think.
It is more the parachute, but it depends on the client, depends on the contract and the freelancer, right? I think that, again, it's a discipline defined in some ways by the individual. And so it can be that full suite. But like, I'm not surprised. I think like, listen, as an industry, we go between like network to boutique to this to that. We go from more freelance to less freelance. I think it's an industry that reflects upon itself, and individuals are self-optimizing. And depending on the nature of how valuable freelance is at a time, people self-optimize. But it bleeds into your number four, which is on cutting and like advertising marketing has been greatly affected by the push to greater efficiencies. And so it can be at times a discipline, like you're as good as your last meeting. And so it can be vulnerable. But then enter previous point around freelance, right? There's a lot of freelance work, and I'll actually jump to number five, which is in-house. I worked in-house for a while at a tech company. Listen, I think you choose your horses for your courses, right? Or your courses for your horses, depending on which way that works better. And it makes a lot of sense for some people. I have friends who spend a lot of time working. It just depends what you're looking for. What's your pursuit? And advertising gives you a certain lifestyle. Working in-house gives you a certain lifestyle. I think it's more about what you want from your job than anything, because there's different benefits. It makes a lot of sense from an efficiency point of view, and from it, like having worked in-house, I understand the desire for it. But again, just slight pitch for advertising agencies. One of our greatest values is that we don't exist within the organization that you're trying to communicate for. And that it's a huge benefit having an external thing looking at that reflection, that outside view, I think is one of the most valuable things an agency can bring to the table. Expats, Emily did a really nice job talking about already, and I forget what the sixth one was, and I can't read my writing.
That's okay. I also want to ensure that I'm curious, Rebecca, your thoughts on in-house agencies. I think it's really interesting because I feel as though they've come a really long way. I mean, we didn't even have agencies like Oliver a few years back, who are now helping different clients set up in-house agencies. And it's not to say that it's a binary, you know, one or the other. We're seeing lots of relationships where creative agencies are working very effectively with in-house agencies. And I also think it's a really great testament to how far strategic planning has come, because what we're seeing of in the UK, more of, at least anyways, which, you know, we often seem to follow them, is that, as I said before, you know, they're investing much more, not only in creatives, but in strategic planners as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's pros and cons, I suppose. And I think that's probably another way that Josh was talking about, you know, if it makes sense or if it suits the need. You know, you made a point that maybe in-house was about resizing and creative, and now it's expanding to almost full service agency in-house. And so that probably expands and contracts depending on the business, depending on the time and need and sophistication of that industry or category. There was an in-house agency at TD, which looks very different now than it did then. And so it's an interesting case study. I think it's the external... and objectivity that an agency provides, which again, Josh, you touched on, is important. So if you're having an in-house agency, being able to have that external and objective, not validation, but like critical eye, is important, so that you're not talking to yourself. But the efficiency of like being inside, knowing the work, knowing the business, and being able to interpret everything inside can also be a huge advantage. So I don't think it's a one size fits all, like most things. Like, it's not a black and white, yes or no kind of a situation.
All right. I mean, that was really all I had to go through. I mean, I threw a whole bunch at you, and you still managed to tread water. So that's awesome. I think I would have curled at some point. But yeah, no, we covered a lot of ground. I mean, I think we talked about a lot in terms of what you've seen change over the last 10. And it sounds like, I mean, obviously there's been massive, massive changes in terms of our media landscape. And, you know, that's kind of where you started off in the beginning. And obviously that has really impacted strategy. I mean, I love this theme of collaboration and being much more integrated into the agency. And, you know, whether it's a three-legged stool or a 10-legged stool, I think the point is that we're working much more closely together, I think, which is a really promising direction to be going in. And so I think it's a terrific that you guys decided to come together as well as an agency client team. You're actually the first team, client agency team, that we've had in this series. So maybe, as we close out, maybe I should have asked this in the beginning, actually, what made you guys decide to, come together to speak on this topic? Was it, reflecting on a particular initiative or campaign or anything that you'd worked on, or was it just I'm curious what sparked this the three of you, actually?
I can't imagine us not working as a team. Everything that we've done on the journey with Kids Help Phone has been in lockstep with McCann, and including a strategic planner from day one. And so it was an exciting opportunity for us to represent how strategic planning is part of this team. It's not a separate discipline. You are not a parachuter into our business, Josh Hansen.
Thank you.
I think the successful campaigns, platforms have that relationship intrinsically baked in. There's that trust, there's communication, collaboration, holding each other accountable for hard conversations about what's a cultural, reality versus like, this is what I really want to say. And so I couldn't have imagined this any other way.
Wow, amazing. I love that you just gave me my quote off the top, because I'm always looking for that after. So thanks for setting that up for me. That's awesome. Any other final reflections before we close out?
Listen, no, we ended strong.
All right. Well, thanks again so much for taking the time. I look forward to seeing your faces at some point soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share this episode, and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts.